Title of the message is Beyond Comfort Zone. I don't even remember that movie, Beyond Thunderdome. I'm a child of the 80s, and I was thinking about getting beyond your comfort zone, and then I thought, well, something a little more dramatic. Oh, I've got it on backwards, Andrew. You're not picking that up, are you? It was on like this. There you go. All right. So, Beyond Comfort Zone. And the idea here is that basically we kind of set our own boundaries about what we're going to do with God and where God's going to be able to take us and how he's going to be able to use us is based on sort of where we set our boundaries. And I have some string here just to show kind of what we have as our, obviously it's not a boundary that's we walk around with, you know, like the boy in the bubble, that there's a physical boundary to keep the world out or keep God out in certain areas. But like Pastor was talking about, in some cultures there's a comfort zone or personal space. In different cultures it's much closer. You meet somebody, I guess, in Spain. I've never been there, but I've heard that it's much more intimate. You know, you even with, you know, men are, you know, they would come up and kiss each other on the cheek and, you know, talk real closely and stuff that would make somebody very uncomfortable in the United States. But we have, you know, we can set our boundaries, so to speak, by just a sort of a based off of our comfort level. So we can kind of know in the sense if something's pushing in on our comfort zone. Now, again, we don't have something physically walking around with us, or some people might have certain things that they say, that's a boundary for me. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to work on a Sunday, for example. And their boss calls them and says, you know, we need you to do this. Or, and so then they know that's a boundary. That's a, you know, something I've said and stated. But you might have just something that's, you know, things that you're not willing to stretch beyond. So that's where I want to kind of go is talking about our boundaries and where we've set them, and maybe if we need to reevaluate some of those things, some of those boundaries we've set, and to examine ourselves. Winston Churchill said, and I think some of this has to do with figuring out what we, in our culture, what we've had a lot, you know, we've heard a lot about how now every kid gets a medal when they participate in athletics. It's not just for the winner. And I think, you know, at a certain age level, that's appropriate to get everybody to feel good about participation, because that's really the goal. But when it gets to be, you know, kids are fourth grade, fifth grade, they didn't understand that's a life lesson. You're not always going to win everything. You're not always going to be the winner. You need to learn how to lose sometimes and lose gracefully and come back to fight another day. Even professional athletes, they have to know they don't have perfect records. And but we have to decide that there's a difference between doing our best. So a lot of times we'll say, well, just do your best. And the kid said, well, I did do my best. You know, as teachers, we might say, or sometimes as parents, just do your best. And there's nothing wrong with sort of not pressuring a kid or being too achievement-oriented where we're just going to just pressure. You need to get that A. You didn't get an A. There's no excuse. There's no reason. There's no, there's, you know, we don't accept that in this household. There's that, obviously, that ditch where it's just, you know, just works. You have to achieve at this level or you're a failure in my eyes. And that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about, we sort of give ourselves a pass. Do you know what I mean? When we say, well, I did my best. You know, that's, I did the best I could. And you hear that a lot in, like, exercise videos. he'll say, do your best and forget the rest. That's a slogan that this one guy who does P90X. You've probably heard of P90X, maybe. No? It's for anybody who does exercise videos or watches any of those infomercial channels that has those things on it, he's on it a lot because he does a lot of stuff and he makes a lot of money for them. But he says, do your best and forget the rest. And obviously there's a application there where he's saying, look, you're doing something, you're getting out and exercising. Don't stress about, you know, did I do it perfectly? Don't worry about that part of it. Just get in there and get active. And he's trying to encourage that. And so that's a good part of it. That's a good application of that. But what I'm trying to get at is here, sometimes we give ourselves a pass and just say, you know, God, I did my best there. I guess I didn't reach that guy. And then we can kind of, you know, well, you know, I did what he asked me to. And we don't have sort of a sense that this is necessary. It's not necessary. It's sort of a suggestion. You know, if God says, hey, talk to that person, and we go talk to that person, and we think, ah, checklist. And we can feel good about it. I'm a checklist person. I like to, and many men are that way, where if you give us a task and we check it off, man, that feels good. You know, especially when you're cooperating with God and you go, you know what? I shared my faith with somebody. You know, good. And it's again focused on what I did instead of, well, how did that have an effect on that person? Is there follow-up needed? Is there prayer needed? What is the follow-up for that person? Where are they at? And how did that affect them? Rather than sometimes I go away and I go, God, I felt good. I felt good about it. I can't wait to share with another Christian about how I shared my faith. I'm going to testify about that. And there's nothing wrong with that, encouraging each other and sharing, and that people kind of see, oh, you know, yeah, this is kind of what we do, and hearing about testimonies is a powerful thing to move people and motivate you. But then what about that person? Winston Churchill said that it's no use saying we are doing our best. You have got to succeed in doing what is necessary. And a wise Jedi once said, there is no try. Do or do not. There is no try. Yoda said that. I had to get that in there. I have a little Yoda doll, but I thought that might be a little... And he actually talks. If you press his arm, he'll say, there is no try. There, do or do not. But that mentality there is... The mindset is that... is on the victory. That's your focus, is that there is something that is... I always will focus on that victory, not on necessarily on the results. So what I mean by that is, if you take someone like a Navy SEAL, and they train and train and train. Now, if you think about Navy SEAL, when they enter into that Navy SEAL training, a lot of these young men, they come into an environment where they're going to be tested, and they know that. They've heard about the SEAL training now. I mean, I've watched documentaries on all the different armed specialized forces in the Marines, Marine snipers, all these different specialized things where they put these men, and it's just men that I've ever seen going through these things, through what would look like just pure hell on earth. And but so these men, they have a pretty good idea when they go into it what the training is, or what the intensity is going to be like. If they've watched any TV shows, if they heard any testimonies of people, you can see the live video of them being tested underwater. Especially the Navy SEALs do a lot of underwater stuff. And they're constantly pushing them to their limit. And they all say that when they come out of there, you know, they went beyond what they thought they could ever do. But they did do. They did it. But, and Sean and I were talking about this because there's that movie Lone Survivor. And one of the things there's a couple things they do. It was, one of them is, the guys that survive, they say, you just never quit. It's mental. I mean, it's not the fittest guys that go, that they go past where you can rely on your physical strength. I mean, the things they do, and you've probably seen some of these clips, or maybe you've watched some of the documentaries, the ways they push their bodies, it goes way beyond what they can physically do. So it's not just the super fit guys are going to get through. It has to be somebody who has that decision. And they don't quit no matter what. Almost like they have to push back certain fears about death. They're underwater, and they're being messed with. There's divers all around them. They're blindfolded, and they're pulling their what's that called? Their, not their aspirator, but their oxygen. They're taking it off underwater, and the guy's got to find it. And he's blindfolded, and they're turning it off. So he gets it back on, the respirator thing, and there's no oxygen. So they're, you know, potentially taking in possibly water. There's just all this confusion, mass. And then their body starts to tell them, you've got to go up. You've got to go up. Quit. Get out. Get out. And they have to fight that very basic survival thing. So their boundary, what they thought they could do. Now, some men, they do. They go up. And if they go up, they quit, and that's it. That's the fail. The fail is just to quit. They don't have to always be successful. And in fact, the men that stay down and pass out underwater, they pull them up and revive them, and they continue with the training. They show them regularly doing compressions, giving oxygen to these men. And, you know, some people think, well, why would they do that? Well, it's so extreme. It's so cruel. It's, you know, it's just, is it just to be macho? Well, again, not to advertise a movie here, but if you were to watch this movie Lone Survivor, and I'm again not advocating that you go out and do that. There's plenty of language in it, but you can see where if they hadn't done that, their mentality, and again, this is where it's not necessarily the results, it's their mentality is, no matter what happens, we're going to fight to survive. We're going to fight, and it doesn't matter what the odds are. When we're in the fight, we're going to fight. And there's a moment where they're all shot up, banged up, and they're facing death. And they're kind of saying, hey, should we have done something differently? He says, hey, when we're still in the fight. We're still in the fight. And if they hadn't gone through that, though, if they hadn't taken those uncomfortable, extremely uncomfortable circumstances and environment, when it came time for that battle, they would have died much quicker. They potentially would have compromised a mission. And that's just one example, but there's lives at stake for them. Most of the time we don't want to push ourselves beyond a point of comfort very far. And really, as a Christian, that's got to be a habit, is for us to be stretching. If we get comfortable with where we've been with God, or comfortable with where we're at in our lives, if we're too comfortable, there's probably something that needs to adjust. There's probably something that needs to be challenged. It's always encouraging when I hear from our pastors or from some speaker and they say, this was really challenging for me. Or I had to really go back and examine this. Because we all still deal with our flesh. And our flesh wants what's comfortable. Our flesh is always going to, until we die, our flesh is going to want and going to be pulling towards what's comfortable, what's easier, what's, and our soul, our mind, we're going to justify why we should go down that path sometimes. Again, sort of that spiritual checklist. Well, I shared with that guy, now he's got to do something with that truth I shared. Now it's his responsibility. I hope he does something with it. Hope he gets somewhere with it. But we don't take it on as our mission and say, not again, not to be obnoxious, it's my mission. I'm just going to get in there and be obnoxious. But how much are we spending in prayer time? That's what I have to challenge myself with. When I think about, I want to reach out. I want to invite people for Alpha. I want to see our church standing room only. Gosh, I hope some of the people are inviting. Hope some of the people invited today. Gosh, those people are going to come streaming in, and Pastor Mary's vision and dream of that. Can't wait till that starts to happen. Let's get to church and wait for it to happen, But yet during the week, those are all those moments when I'm encountering people. How are they going to find out what we have to offer? If I'm not inviting somebody who's hurting, if I'm not extending that out, and then yeah, sure, that's going to happen. Where they're going to tell others, and others are going to come. But if I'm not initiating and I go here, and I'm waiting for others to do it. Where's that going to start? Paul said in 1 Corinthians 9:27, he said, "No, I strike a blow to my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize." Okay, I got behind in my notes here. I jumped ahead. Let's look at, I talked about Navy SEALs. Think about the Apostle Paul, the things that he endured. In 2 Corinthians 11:21, "Are they servants of Christ? I am out of my mind to talk like this. I am more. I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, and been exposed to death again and again." So we're talking about those Navy SEALs being exposed to death in their training, so that when they get exposed to death, they don't. They know what to do. They know, and they advance under fire. Same with Paul here. Paul's talking about all the things that happened to him. He didn't sort of become a shrinking violet and say, "You know what? This is outside my boundaries. Spending a night and a day in the deep. God, you know what? I think most people would agree, right? That's too much. I know." Sometimes I'm challenged by that, by things that maybe I'll say, we've got church, or I'm doing something for church, and it's just a scheduling thing, like, hey, can you meet up for, I'm trying to think of a good example, maybe it's a sporting thing, You know, like they'll schedule, like Jude plays hockey, and they'll schedule a game on Sunday. And if we left church early, we'd get him there and stuff like that. And we're like, you know what? First of all, he's 8 years old. This shouldn't be that hard of a decision. But we have church. We're just not going to be there. You know, that's a small thing. But then when I think about what if it got really uncomfortable? What if it was dangerous to come to church? You know, what if it was there was some threat of legal, you know, the police harassing me on my way to church? You know, I think sometimes I sort of think, well, this country, we've moved away from where God was promoted in our schools or in our society, in our culture, and we have. I'm not disagreeing with that. But sometimes I think, feel sorry for myself as a Christian a little bit, like, oh, you know, it'd be so nice if it wasn't that way, but that's the world. And I think about other countries, new believers that are risking their lives in places like Iran. And, man, you know, it challenges me a bit to think, how would I respond under that type of pressure? You know, as a guy, and I watch a movie like A Lone Survivor, and I think, I wonder if I could have, you know, you want to test yourself. You want to test and see, how would I respond under that kind of training? Would I be able to push through and develop that kind of confidence is what they also develop through those experiences. They develop confidence that they know when we get in the situation, not just me, but my team. I have confidence in my team. I can rely on my brothers. They said, I'm out here with my brothers. Those men are super reliant on each other. But they've tested themselves. They know what to do. They know they can do it. And that's why I think when Apostle Paul talks about when those situations come up, at least this is my interpretation, is that it's an opportunity for you to be able to test and to prove not just yourself, but Christ in you. And then, so there's that side, kind of our physical side of us doing stuff, us being pushed. And one thing there that wasn't something I was planning to talk about, but the team mentality. You know, when those guys, they talk about these SEALs, and I heard an interview with a guy who trained the actors to play in this movie to depict this real-life situation very accurately. And he said that, they said, well, how do these guys do it? Why are they, you know, how do you do it? Is it just the training and you know, your will to survive? And he said, yeah, that's all there. But he said the biggest thing on their minds when they're out in that situation, the thing that they fear worst of all is letting down one of their teammates. To them, that is, they like leaving a man behind, that kind of thing. That's like, you know, if I would have an analogy to like a hunting dog, there's bloodhounds will track down an animal until they die. They'll go so hard that they'll actually die from exhaustion. They just have it in them. They can't let off of that scent or that track. And that's what they said about these men, is that they literally, one of their guys was back with the enemy, insurmountable odds, and their plan was to go and rescue him. Their plan was to go and take him back and rescue their comrade, their brother fallen. You know, that mentality of, I'm here not just for me and what I'm going to do, but I've got a team here. And that team mentality is so important to me, and maintaining that, taking care of my teammates, being there for my teammates is so important. It's my life doesn't matter. I want to do what, you know, I mean, the stories of self-sacrifice in those kind of situations, because they have a team, they're now doing it for someone else. And so our limit, what we can do, now we can expand that. It's because we have a team, that we're not just doing it for ourselves. See, when we just think about ourselves, and the devil loves to get us just thinking about ourselves, what's your comfort? Our flesh wants us to get us thinking about ourselves. What's the risk to you? How's that going to look to you? What's your boss going to think? What about that promotion that's coming? You know, what, they're not going to look favorably if you start sharing at work, or, you know, whatever thoughts can come, you know, that might try and keep you in your box, keep you quiet at work, keep you quiet in other areas of your life, in your neighborhood. Well, my kids play with that person's kids. I don't want them to be shunned because they don't agree with our family. You know, I'm sure I'm not the only one that's thought some of these things, but when we start to think about, well, wait, someone else is relying on me. Now we can go farther than we thought we could. We can see what is necessary to help a teammate, and we can step beyond what we might have done because we've got a team mentality, and we know there's others relying on us. There's others that whose lives will be negatively impacted if I don't do my job, if I don't do my part. And that's where I think that quote, Winston Churchill's quote, it's no use saying we are doing our best. You have got to succeed in doing what is necessary. That's a mindset that says, you know what? I'm not gonna stop when I think I've my limit, you know. Well, you know, and again, not to just harp on giving, but it's such an easy example, sort of, well, I've done 10% and a little extra. That's, you know, that's enough. Yeah, I feel a sense that maybe I should get involved in some missions giving, and maybe I should stretch that and stretch out a little bit beyond that. You know, we'll do a little there. But, you know, really saying, okay, God, I'm going to stop and just listen. What would you like me to do here? How much would you like me to give towards this? What is it you would have me do? And really, I've done that sometimes, and it's kind of scary. It's scary to our flesh, scary to my brain starts to go, oh man, dude, what are you doing? Don't ask him that. Just give what you, you know, kind of have to, you know, not, that, I don't have that literal, those words in my head, but I'm sort of, that's the sense I'm feeling is like, the tithe is enough, dude. Don't worry about that. You don't need to do that. There's people that have more money. They can do more and stuff like, you know, And I step out and go, nope, we're going to do it. God, what would you have us to give? And so, I mean, we've missed it. You know, I've probably sometimes given a different amount than what, maybe I've gone over sometimes. I think most of the time we tend to go under, just personally. That's been maybe my experience. And, you know, as you start to do that, like when we started to, you know, just step out beyond the tithe a bit, and I would talk to Jennifer and say, you know, I was thinking maybe we should give extra. She's like, okay, like, what were you thinking? I said, well, got two numbers. You know, one was lower, the other was about double that. And it was, you know, something that was a stretch for us. And again, a stretch for us, you might go, that's not that much. Well, again, it's based on, God, that's why it's percentages. Your stretch for you might not be a stretch for someone else. You know, the woman that, the widows might, you think about that. That wasn't a lot of money, but it was all she had. It was everything. That was a, for her, that was a huge stretch. The woman with Elisha, where she's going to cook the bread and then die. Me and my son, then we're going to die. And so that's her sustenance for life right there. And she's willing to give that. And then she receives, of course, but getting beyond that comfort zone in our giving too is a great practice for this. You know, sometimes we think, man, if that was me, I'd lay my life down for my friends. I'd, if someone was, you know, came in my house, I would put my life on the line for my family. I'd go in harm's way for my, you know, for a brother. I would, guys, we can talk real macho after, especially after a movie like that. Man, I'd go charge in there and try and save him. You know, like we're Rambo and we're going to save the day. But yet we're not willing to stretch and get beyond our comfort zone. And see, those guys, when you hear interviews with them and stuff, they're not macho at all. Most of the guys that I've ever heard talk, they're Navy SEALs and been through that kind of training where they've been tested, pushed the extreme limits. They're not macho men. They don't talk. They're not cocky. They're very humble. Because, and I'm not sure why I've never been through that, but they've seen what it takes, the sacrifice that it takes. And they know and respect so much what their teammates are sacrificing. It's very humbling when you're experiencing that, from what I've seen. Got a couple more thoughts, then we'll wrap up here. So that's sort of, I've talked a lot about our comfort zone, and that's our response to God. There is a side where, you know, there's certain things. But God is such a good God, and He is such an amazing supply. And let me just read from Isaiah here. It says that He's going to provide us things. Isaiah 40:29, He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Strength and power are for use, not just giving, not just keeping in. That's my little editorial. Strength and power are for use. You know, nobody runs electrical wires into their house and then lights candles. You light candles if the electricity isn't working. You use some alternative means of heat if the electricity isn't working. Nobody runs those things into their cable into their house and doesn't watch the cable. Well, maybe some people do because they don't want to be distracted. But you understand, when you have things, that power coming in, you use it. It's for use. me see one other one here. 2 Corinthians 13:4. For to be sure he was crucified in weakness, yet he lives by God's power. He lives by God's power. Let that sink in. That's us too. We live by God's power. Now whether we recognize it or not is a different thing. And the degree to which we recognize it is the degree to which we'll walk in it. Likewise, we are weak in him, yet by God's power we will live with him in our dealing with you. And then it says after that, so this power that we're imbued with power, filled with the Holy Ghost, we've got, Jesus has made the way for us. He's our way out. He's our way out. We have to have that so much reliance on him and trust in him. Prayer, reliance on the Holy Spirit. So that when we are facing that insurmountable enemy, we're not just looking at our teammates. We're not just looking at our training. We're not just looking at our equipment and what we've got with us. We're looking to the source who can do things way beyond what we could ever imagine. Think about Elijah. If you go in 2 Kings chapter 6 and 7, there's some amazing feats that are done there. Some amazing things happen there. Elijah's in a situation where he's being sought out because he's giving the secrets of a, which king is that? The Amalekites? Anyways, he's giving up the enemy's secrets, and the enemy says, who is it in our camp that's against us? And so they say, it's not anybody in our camp. It's Elijah, the man of God, who's telling the king, and he knows all these things, anticipating. He even hears what you say in your bedchamber. So they go and they array this army when they wake up, and Gehazi says to him, you know, master, what are we to do? Look at the army that's arrayed against us. And Elijah says that there's more that are with us than are against us. And when I was talking about this with Bernard, actually, and we were talking about, Elijah didn't even have to see that. But he says, God, open up the eyes of my servant that he may see. So then Gehazi can see it, and he sees into the Spirit. But it doesn't say Elijah saw it. Elijah said it. Elijah believed it. And by his faith, Gehazi was able to see that. And then they're delivered. They walk them hand in hand, blinded. Blinded. Now, if they would have said, all right, what do we got here? We've got a bow and arrow. Are you pretty good with the bow and arrow, Gehazi? All right, we've got, who else can we? Summon somebody. Summon some people. Go on your horse and get some, you know, they started doing everything and looking around. What do we have? What's in the covers? Do I have any weapons? What do we got? How are we going to do this? Maybe we can hide. Let's do something. And they start thinking just what they can do. But he starts to declare those that are with, he says right away, first thing, he's waking up in the morning. Those that are with us are more than against us. He's aware of that spirit realm right away. And that's still true for us. And in fact, we have a greater covenant based on better promises. So we have even more ability to be able to be in that spirit realm, have those things come into play in the natural and affect the natural. And then in another, right in the next, in the next chapter, it's talking about these four lepers and, how the, now I get the cities mixed up. Oh my gosh. But there was a city that was under siege by the Arameans. Okay. And they were doing crazy things, right? The king is walking along and the lady says, help us. My friend, you know, we were supposed to eat, we ate my kid yesterday. Now we're supposed to eat her kid today. And she hit him somewhere, you know, and he tears his clothes. It's like, oh my, what? They're starving. And, so Elijah says, you know what? Basically, this is going to turn around. And they go, there's one guy that says, yeah, right. And Elijah says, it's going to turn around, but you're not going to partake of it. And so then these four lepers are outside the city gates, and they say, if we go inside the city gates, we'll die. But if we stay out here, we'll die. Let's go to the camp of the Arameans and see if we can, they'll take mercy on us. If they don't, they'll kill us. We die anyway. That's our best chance. So they go there, and it's deserted. This force that was laying siege and starving out is now gone. And sometimes we think, well, we're in a recession. I can't do that. I can't step out and give. I can't step out and do this. But yet God was able to have a whole army of men hear the sound. They heard the sound of a big army coming to overtake them. And they fled in terror, leaving everything. And these lepers found all kinds of resources there. Not only was their enemy defeated, but he left behind all these resources. Their livestock, their clothing, their riches, silver and gold were left behind in that camp. So not only did God deliver them out of the hand of the enemy, but he actually took all the spoils of the enemy and delivered it, left it for them to come and take. And they still didn't trust it. They came back and reported it. And they thought, well, maybe they're hiding. Maybe they're hiding and they can attack us. But they went in and discovered, no, God is so good. And that God is the same yesterday, today. He's going to be the same God tomorrow. And we'll just finish with that thought, that while we have to do things and respond to God and stretch, just in our believing, sometimes that's really where it's at. It's all up here. Those guys like the Navy SEALs, the stretching they had to do was right here, not quit, not stop. And those instructors are trying to get, they're down their face yelling at them, are you sure you want to do this? You just have to ring that bell. Just go over there and ring that bell. It'll all be over. You can go home. And they're telling them, don't do this. Why are you here? They keep asking them, why are you here? Why are you doing this? And they have to answer. They have to give an answer. I'm going to be a Navy SEAL, sir! And they're just, I mean, you're going, how could they do that? They've got their team. They've committed to something. And they've got a never quit attitude. They're not doing my best. Those guys don't go in there and say, well, I'm going to do my best. They say, I'm going to do what's necessary. Once we make that commitment, God will honor that. God will then come in and supply. God is that's where we can tap into that, just that unlimited resource of what God can start to do and how he can move. Amen?